Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Marcel Guerin. Marcel is a serial entrepreneur. He is a co-founder and CEO of a company called SciTed, which is based in Cambridge, UK. He was recently selected on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for leaders in Europe. He has just some great thoughts he's going to share around his career and lessons learned, and looking forward to today's conversation with Marcel. First off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career history?
Yeah, so I'm an academic, sort of like academic turned entrepreneur over the last 10 years or so. So my original background is in natural sciences, right at the interface between physics, chemistry, biology. I did an undergrad in nanoscience, which is, you know, working with biomaterials, quantum chemistry, quantum physics as well. So the realm of things, which is actually quite far away from where I then moved afterwards, which is sort of like from very microscopic things to more macroscopic things. And obviously, you know, working in healthcare for the last couple of years, so it has been quite a transition in terms of sort of scales I'm working on as well. After that undergrad, I went into medical technologies, sort of like focused more on medical physics. Always had a computational background. I started teaching myself programming in my mid late teenage years. So I always had a strong affinity towards computer science and, you know, what can you do with computational technology and what can you do with writing code, you know, building homepages, building tools that make your everyday life easier, that increase productivity or similar. And right after my undergrad, I sort of like then decided to couple these things together, went into medical imaging, medical physics, and then got into data analysis in medical imaging and machine learning in medical imaging as well. So applying models which take data, learn from data, in this case, medical imaging data, and then try to make new conclusions, you know, infer new information of that data for unseen data, respectively. And from there on, then this was both in Germany, that undergrad, then went to the UK, to Cambridge, to do a PhD, basically just digging deeper into that area, building machine learning models applied to medical imaging data, particularly in pathology, which is sort of where my main background is from a healthcare perspective. And doing that PhD, I sort of came from the UK, I came from Germany, had a software consultancy, which I was still running in Germany, decided to leave that consultancy, decided to focus on the PhD, which hasn't worked out very well because I sort of like got right back into the next venture. And co-founded SciTed with one of my PhD advisors and another physician, which I've met during my PhD. And sort of SciTed has now developed into a company which initially was very product focused, and we are still commercializing a number of different products. But now we're sort of a diagnostic infrastructure provider and doing that at quite a large scale right now, and have picked up a lot of speed over the last year, as you can imagine, particularly with all of the things which were happening around COVID. We're not directly involved in COVID diagnostics, but we work in the diagnostic space, but also pathology imaging space, and are doing quite a lot of work on early detection of cancer, which has been an interesting topic over the last year as well, where a lot of people actually didn't have access to care because of restriction to, you know, healthcare services, and they were all sitting at home and didn't go to visit their family practice or went to the hospital. So it has been an interesting year for us, certainly. And yeah, I think that's sort of a brief overview of the history and background, which brought me here today as well.
Great. Well, yeah. And I think we talked a little bit before we got started that living through this past year was like 10 years of experience in 1 year. And I also want to congratulate you on being selected for the 30 under 30 list from Forbes magazine for Europe. And that's a great accomplishment.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about, you mentioned as far as kind of with your current company, you've gone through that process of starting it as well as kind of building it, you know, during a very unusual time. You know, thinking back, and I said this to you before I asked this question to most guests, you know, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself at 22? And you're closer to that that age than most of our guests are, but you've experienced a lot in the last year that I'm sure you probably wish you would have known some things prior to what you've been able to accomplish. You've made some great, sounds like, progress, but talk a little bit about just some lessons that you've learned in the last several years.
Yeah, that, I mean, you obviously picked up on that. I had a crash course in a number of different things, I think, for which some people have the opportunity. I wouldn't necessarily call it a good thing for some people. Well, where most people have the opportunity to take some more time and, you know, get sure. slowly introduced into certain topics as well. That, you know, that ranges from, well, that actually covers a very broad spectrum. But one of the highlights, I think, from like what I've seen over the last year as well, is, you know, team building, team growth, organizational management, building organizational structure, maintaining culture, mm-hmm. all of these elements, which sort of are, they all are flying in that sphere around leadership in one or right. the other way. And I do think that there are some components of leadership which, you know, you can approach using intuition. And I think that's something I was quite lucky to get quite a lot of exposure in quite early in my life as well, to maybe pick up some of these components or elements which are quite important to start doing that from a very intuitive perspective. But then there are a lot of other things which are the very hard elements to it, which are quite hard to just, you know, they don't come to you easily. You need to make the experiences, you know, difficult, you know, HR sort of situations as well. They don't come to anyone, you know. If something is not going well with a business partner or with an employee or with any other stakeholder around the company, how to manage that, what conversations to have, how to keep, you know, to stay level-headed and make sure that it's managed the right way. It sort of like follows the medical education paradigm of see one, do one, teach one, you know. Yeah. So, and you need to see one first before you can do one yourself. Or you need to at least have someone who's holding your hand in the beginning to make sure that, you know, your own compass aligns with what happens around you, and that you make sure that that's all sort of like represents, you know, an objective right way to do it, but also the subjective way to do that. And I think, coming back to your question, if there's any advice I would have given myself, well, 7 years ago, now 22 year old, I think and this is a very, very sort of almost a bit of an obvious one as well, but I think everyone gets told something very similar probably around this age as well, is that some things will just take a bit more time. It sounds really silly, but I think I can contextualize it with a couple of specific things. So I think best thing actually is, and let's take one example which I've been spending quite a lot of time in the last year working on. We work on a number of different technologies and products as well. And product market fit is obviously in business something which is fundamental to a successful venture in one or the other way. But I have to admit that with what I have had experienced at 22, 21, 22, I was quite naive in some of these ways as well. How to think about something like this, you know, you overestimate the market quite easily because you haven't seen that much, you haven't spoken to many people yet. But it's nothing you can accelerate. Well, you can start talking to a lot of people overnight and like build an understanding for, I have an idea, how do I externally validate that idea? So, you know, product market fit is a very similar example. You have an idea of a venture, of a technology, of something interesting, might be even a very, very simple idea. And who do you go and talk to, you know? And I think with 22, one of the things which I certainly tended to do is, you know, I tried to validate them in my head. You know, you sort of like put yourself into different personas, and you try to understand, oh, what's the flaw with that idea? But I only learned over the years that, you know, that only really works very well if you sometimes actually have the courage and you take something out there which you think is premature, you talk to other people and they just crush it. Mm. It's very, very, I think it was quite a tough lesson to learn, I would say, in my 20s, because I was someone who, you know, I was grew up being quite an introvert as well. So a lot of things happened somewhere in my mind. But then making that change over in my 20s to, you know, also with the academic exposure, but the business exposure, to take things out of my mind and, you know, use other people as sounding boards, validate ideas externally. I think that's one of the things which my 22-year-old me would have not been very grateful for and would have not understood where I'm coming from. but it probably would have made sense to send that message back in a time machine. So
sure. Well, this last year has been a challenge for any person in business and wherever you are, it's been some uncharted water. Thinking back, you've started a company, you raised money kind of during this whole time, and what are some things that you've done or learned through this last year plus that you think has helped kind of keep things on track and keep things kind of focused?
I'm not going for the obvious answer now, because I think a lot, I'm sure you had a lot of conversations as well in the last year with people that were talking about, remote working culture, working in the office culture as well, and how working in the office and how then that shapes culture as a consequence. How do people interact with one another? How do they communicate socially, but also how do they communicate in a work-related context? I think there's probably every single one of us had sort of their own personal challenge, with the last year. For some of them, it was obviously, people that are very social, it might be, some mental health issues which come as a result of not being able to live your life the way you wanted to live. Some people that, don't rely on that so much, they might have struggled with something else. I think I think I was we were in an interesting position, because obviously Cited as a company was like, it's still not a mature organization. We're working towards that because it's still a very young organization and a very young team. But I sort of like identified two different domains. One of them were my personal elements, around which you realize, oh, okay, you can work from home if you have to, and you have to approach it this and that way if you want to be successful with it, and if you want to make sure that your energy balance is sort of like maintained, you have to think about this and that, and sort of like realizations, which again, you made that comparison before we started as well. 10 years felt like, 1 year, and 1 year felt like 10 years. But then obviously the other ones are organizational pieces as well. And to give you an example there, the first people, so we here in the UK, we had the first lockdown, I think starting around the 20th of March in 2020. And we had one person starting at Cited on the 1st of March together with me, basically. And then we had another three starting on the 1st of April. Yeah. And on the 1st of March, not that there was any, people were still a bit, what's going to happen now? National lockdown seems to be something which is out of a movie. Is this really going to happen? Then it eventually happens. But then 10 days later, and this was sort of like where my personal element came in as well. We had three people that actually started in the company overnight, and this was all planned. There was some office space prepared in theory and didn't happen. So I think the most challenging piece from a personal perspective, which was obviously much closer to the organizational piece by then, because it was the team wasn't very big. It was just, you had all of these plans, and how do you now improvise in a sensible way without throwing all of the paper up in the air and saying, right, what are we going to do next? Mm-hmm. And I know this is a tough question from your side as well, but to sort of like try to bring it back to the question, I think it's, I think every organization, every person probably learned something completely different about themselves and, how they cope with certain things in the last 15, 16, 17 months. I think so that is true. Well, that's true for me. And I think that's also true for Cited, which is sort of the organization which I've seen growing over the last year or so.
What have you done as far as to kind of keep your team together? Are you back working together as far as in person, or are you still working virtually?
Still working virtually. We're obviously running our laboratories as well. So the laboratories, we don't really have a choice because people need to be there in person. So that really hasn't changed over the last year. What has changed is that we are now trying to make sure that so to also manage, just occupancy and making sure that it's not overcrowded at this point in time. So right teams spend time together at the right time. That's sort of like what we're trying to work towards right now. So we've built a return to, working in the office plan as well, which has a hybrid model, how long we expect certain teams to work remotely and work in the office as well. But we want to maximize that, what you just said as well, those, the soft interactions, between people, which are work related and obviously also, you know, personal right. and socially related, that those are enabled by basically getting the right people together. So let's see how that's going. I mean, we will see in the next 3, 4, 5 months what those months have to bring.
Sure. What are you excited about? Some things, trends that you're seeing in healthcare and you're kind of at the forefront of some of the exciting things that are happening as a company, but talk a little bit about just some of the things that you're seeing and excited about that's going to change things.
I think something which you probably have seen on various different social media in the last couple of or last few weeks as well, it's sort of the redefining digital health and the companies which have developed in that ecosystem. Right. So, we know there's similars in the US as well. I know that Babylon Health, which is a UK company, now operates in the US as well. And it enables teleconsultation for family doctors, you know, with patients. And there's a lot of interesting business models which have developed around that. Also like the, you know, there's a company called Huma here as well, which have recently raised quite a lot of money, which sort of are building a virtual hospital, you know, on your phone, basically to help patients follow up and make sure that they, well, that the right information is available at the right time to the right people in a patient's care pathway and or diagnostic pathway. And there's other companies as well. There's Wine Health here in the UK, and then tons of others in the US. And they've all come up they all are now getting traction because of obviously a change in sentiment. Mm-hmm. But something I think which will be quite interesting is how will that follow through eventually in terms of, you know, you can, which elements of healthcare or healthcare delivery can you actually make digital and, for example, also bring home to certain people? There's all other exceptional companies in this space as well who do at home testing kits for different diseases. You know, Healthy.io, for example, also now I think active in the US. They have a brilliant angle on this specific topic. But my bigger question is the elements around those individual pieces. You know, you are a company providing a test at home. You are a company providing teleconsultation. Where is that element which basically makes the patient journey go completely digital? And I don't think that the public healthcare systems will be able to do that by themselves. It will be done driven by industry and by private companies. Who sees that entire journey from start to end? So also, how do you then access treatment? How do you follow up? How do you get diagnosed for the next condition? All within one ecosystem, and how that will work. It's sort of probably the holy grail of digital health, but I think it has probably become quite obvious that over the last year, you know, that element is great. You can digitize it. That element is great. You can digitize it, and you can stop people from actually having to go somewhere physically.
Sure.
I think the so what question would be then the next one is like, how can we, you know, what are new care models where a nurse is coming to your home to actually do this test because it's more efficient and that person is doing it to 20 other patients in the area on the same day. And when do those operating models, you know, like complement the digital element, the digital ones, and when will all of that come together? So, you know, how do you decentralize healthcare in some ways, but in a sensible way, not just for the sake of decentralizing it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the mind shift has changed with the people that get the care. Now all of a sudden everybody maybe that hadn't experienced a telehealth type setting now have probably experienced it in the last year just with necessity and that. So it definitely has shifted quite a bit. What books do you recommend to leaders that you've read either recently or in the past that's kind of at the top of your reading list?
It's almost like I would have to take individual chapters of individual books and put them together into a new book, which I'm not planning to do ever in my life. I don't think it would make a very, very nice or, well, very good book to read. I think there's things like Simon Sinek's Start With Why are quite interesting books to start with. And you can, I mean, if you go through that spectrum of, you know, leadership, business management, all the way to all of the other subdomains which you can derive from there. There's individual, you know, I, for example, personally, you know, Start With Why, Simon Sinek is a great book. Also, and I think they have to be taken with a pinch of salt, but Measure What Matters from John Doerr, for example, about OKR theory, which is sort of more like a performance management approach for organizations, are very interesting. They're very interesting elements in there where everyone, I think, who reads them needs to carefully look at them and say, what do I want to adopt, you know, from these books? There's another quite good one as well from Patty McCord, which is called Powerful, who I think she was chief people officer at Netflix. I think it was co-authored by Reed Hastings as well, Netflix CEO. All three of them, I think, are very good books to start with. They all cover very different things. Powerful covers, you know, the cultural element and how do you build, you know, sense of accountability and responsibility in organization. Measure What Matters sort of like does, how do you measure the organization, which is a sort of very quantitative approach. And Start With Why is sort of the glue between a lot of these different things, which is, you know, actually what makes the individual that gets up in the morning and leads the organization, what does it make? Why do they get up? And what do they communicate? Do they, you know, what is inspiring them, and how can then that be used, or how that can then be used to inspire others in a company or in an organization to achieve the same? So I would say those three books, you know, somewhere okay. in the space of three books is where I would start reading. And then, as you know, the lists on Amazon are endless. So.
Right. Good. So you're into technology. You've coded, so I'm sure you use technology tools. Any apps or technology that's helped you be more productive in your career?
I actually tried a lot of them. I mean, if to-do management lists, you know, ranging from, if I start saying one of them, I have to probably say all of the others, which I won't do. I never found I'm a digital evangelist, sort of like for everything. We have a, you know, we are starting a big sustainability project inside it later this year as well, in terms of like, you know, getting a laboratory paper free is quite difficult, but you know, we're spending quite a lot of time thinking about how this will happen. But if we think about paper in general, there's still individual sheets of papers on my desk here, actually. To-do manage that, like the individual tooling for to-do management has never been really, really successful on me. I can't really say why. Not because I'm a person that says I like the feel of paper. It's not that. It's probably the flexibility of like me being able to choose the format of how I want to write something down very, very quickly. I am an avid tablet user though. So for everything which, you know, where you can use a tablet as an intermediary, I take sometimes notes on an iPad as well. That's quite handy. There's some good apps there which I've actually tried to streamline a lot of the work which I do on a day-to-day basis on a tablet. And you know, the way how Apple and obviously Android have developed their ecosystems over the last year has facilitated that quite a lot, like apps like Notability, but then the obvious ones, you know, like Slack, getting a team together, you know, or that things like DocuSign are fully compatible on an iPad. You in theory can have your office on an iPad these days quite easily. So I would rather say not a specific app, I would rather say the platform enables the productivity. And in this case, in my case, it's actually tablets. So.
Okay. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
I'm an aquarium person. So I've can't show you this now, but it's in the other room. So certainly in the last year, I've spent an inordinate amount of time maintaining an aquarium here at home, much more than I probably would admit doing in public, which I think I've just done. But I think a lot of other things is, I mean, I'm quite into music, but it has been, to come back to one of your earlier questions, it has been quite hard. And I sort of like almost struggle to think how I've dealt with my time off, if you can call it like this, 16, 17 months ago, because the limitations, you know, to go outside and do something with other people. I do a lot of things which might even be related to work to to recharge these days. And it sounds maybe a bit, I don't think it's unhealthy, but it's I'm trying to find my balance again, to be frank, because it has been quite difficult in the last 15, 16 months to maintain that balance with, you know, building the organization. And you know, we're just under 40 people now in 15 months time, which was a crazy trajectory. So your brain is always somewhere else. I think one of the key things which I'm quite looking forward to is just being able to, you know, weekend trips. You know, the UK is a great, you know, or England, Great Britain is, you know, great couple of islands basically, which have a lot of diversity in landscape as well. So it's quite nice for a weekend getaway to just do that and recharge. And then, you know, one or the other book about leadership or, you know, performance management or whatever it is. I'm sort of that person who probably resorts to reading books which are not really, they're sort of like hybrid between leisure and work, but it's sort of the type of literature I usually fall for.
Well, and I've had somebody else, Jason Malad, who introduced the two of us, he kind of gave me a little bit of a viewpoint of Cambridge. It sounds like just a type of community that there's a lot of innovation going on, and I didn't realize how many companies were spinning out as far as in that area. But talk a little bit about that, just your experience. You're not originally from there, but talk a little bit about just the kind of the atmosphere there.
Yeah, it is a very tight ecosystem, which is great. I mean, in terms of, you know, if you look at a graph and you want to see how many nodes does it take for me to be connected to someone else in that network, usually the critical path is quite short. It usually has one person somewhere in between. A thing I usually tend to say about Cambridge as well, and I think the ecosystem is great. I certainly personally have benefited of it quite a lot as well. If we think about the context of building, you know, businesses and organizations, there are a number of good examples from Cambridge as well, but if you look at certain other areas, and this is mostly down to probably elements of culture, but also, you know, size of the ecosystem and maybe not exactly past the point of critical mass. I think Cambridge is very strong on the early stage, you know spinning out companies, sure, you know, building a platform technology, validating, proving their technology, making sure that there's some path to commercialization as well. But then going from technology over product to business is the hardest path for any company.
Right.
But I think in a company which is very academically minded, and I come from an academic environment, I went through the system here as well, it is quite challenging sometimes. And I'm advising and coaching a lot of other founders as well in my spare time. It is quite, you can always almost see how, you know, some of them almost hit a glass ceiling basically, because the ecosystem doesn't teach it in any other way. So, you know, there's the thinking on how to build a business is very different than, you know, thinking how to validate a technology, and how, you know, you might get some good publications for the company and maybe the research group which is affiliated with the company out there.
Sure.
And that transition is something where then, you know, like people like Jason and Start Code on other accelerator schemes are sort of coming in and trying to bridge that gap. But I think organically in the past, you always could see that there was a very strong bottleneck towards the middle of that. So basically, how do you get a company, you know, which has an academically minded team, which is not a bad thing for a company. Some exceptional companies from Cambridge and all over the place are coming from a very academic mindset. But the question is, how do you pivot over, and does the ecosystem support that pivot? I think that's sort of the main thing which there's still some work which needs to be done over the next many, many years. And hopefully with Cited, for example, set a bit of a precedent in how that could be done as well. We don't always play that much by the rules here in Cambridge, but I think it's important, you know, get external investors into the ecosystem as well and break it open. So it's not always the same people investing in the same companies to try to achieve the same thing. Not that I think that it's a bad thing, you know, the outcomes justify doing it. But I think there's a sort of second, third, or even third perspective to all of that, which is becoming more and more obvious and important to address in one or the other way in that ecosystem here.
So what parting advice would you give a newer upcoming leader? Just some thoughts that you have that you'd leave.
Probably to be very, very clear on, this is not in reference to the book, actually. I don't mean that particular why, how Simon, well, it's probably related to Simon Sinek's why as well on leadership, but also organizational culture and how to maintain or nurture that. I think it's quite important for someone who gets into a role like this, you know, for example, like me quite early on in my life as well. And then there's also a lot of responsibility coming with it and getting to grips with that. There needs to be a certain resilience which needs to be built either on the job or just before that to make sure that you're comfortable with the uncertainty of that. You usually end up, you know, if you think about, you know, the chief exec role in an organization as well, you usually become the last step of escalation. Positive, but primarily negative escalation. So to be aware, and this is actually one of the main reasons why I stopped with the software consultancy, you know, at some point as well, because I became the person in projects and in the company as well, permanently was taking all of the, you know, I was trying to weather the storm for the company, sort of like, which was okay, but it's very important to know in advance that that's what's going to happen. You know, we also had like blips at Cited over the last 12, 16 months, and I had a number of sleepless nights over them as well. And to come to a point where you know that this will happen and you're happy and comfortable that you have can accept it, I think it's really hard to say this to anyone in advance of doing it, but in the moment when you start it, everyone will know what I'm talking about, because it is a, you know, it's all a very human interaction as well. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, you build an organization from scratch or you lead an organization, you become emotionally attached to it in some ways. You also can avoid doing that, which you need to do for certain, you know, for certain pathways, you know, whether we think about a company turnaround or something like this, you need to be coming in with a crowbar. If you build a company from scratch in a startup or scale-up culture, scale-up environment, I think you need to, yeah, it's quite important to know in advance what you're buying into. And there's a good reason why a lot of people say you only do this twice or three times in your life usually, because you probably have exhausted your batteries in life at some point where you need to draw from at times to get through those individual periods of time.
Well, Marcel, this has been a lot of fun, and I wish you continued success as you lead your company. And it sounds like you've got some exciting things on the horizon, and definitely look forward to seeing all that you're going to be doing in the future.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.